Lorena here from Everything's Canceled podcast. Herman and I hope you've been enjoying our show. The best way to support us right now is to subscribe to our Patreon for some exclusive episodes and more at patreon.com/everythingscanceled. And don't forget, there's only one L in canceled. And shop our new merch on our Shopify. The Shopify is everythingscanceled.myshopify.com. Now let's get to today's show.
Fresh out the box. Stop. Look and watch. Ready yet? Get set. It's all that.
You're listening to Everything's Canceled podcast with your hosts,
Herman
and Lorena. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening to right now and follow us on Instagram at Everything's Canceled podcast. In each episode, we discuss topics in detail that could be triggering for some listeners, so please listen with care.
All content provided in this podcast is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Any copyrighted content reproduced in this podcast is done so in accordance with Section 107 of the Copyright Act, allowing fair use and is not an infringement of copyright. Any information discussed referring to specific incidents are allegations only, unless proven otherwise in a court of law. Due to the changing nature of laws, rules, and regulations, the hosts make no representations to the accuracy or completeness of any information in this podcast and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, nor the availability of this information, for any losses, injuries, or damage from the display or use of this information.
You're listening to Everything's Canceled.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Your hosts, Lorena.
And Herman.
And who's canceled this week, Herman?
This week we are talking about Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon. And Dan Schneider and Brian Peck.
Yeah, I feel like it's not just the two names that we just said, but I feel like Nickelodeon. Aren't you glad you got your
Nickelodeon? Is your home a Nickelodeon home?
Itself is kind of getting canceled here.
Relationship to, or those people's relationship to Nickelodeon, an enabling relationship in some ways.
So if you've been living under a rock, there is a new documentary out called Quiet on Set, which is covering the horrific child actor childhoods of some of our favorite celebrities from child TV sitcoms of the 2000s or 90s and 2000s. And the main perpetrators that we're going to be talking about today is Dan Schneider and Brian Peck. And I won't list all the names that we're going to go through, but we're going to be talking about Drake Bell and Amanda Bynes and Jeanette McCurdy.
Of all that and Zoe 101.
Yeah,
Jamie Lynn Spears. Ariana Grande.
Yeah, there's a lot of cameos that are going to come in. So why don't we just start with, what is your relationship to Nickelodeon, specifically the era? I feel like there's two eras that we're talking about that kind of blend together, but the 90s and the 2000s, you know, from All That, we'll start with All That, that show. What is your relationship with these shows, Herman, and these actors?
I think this will be interesting to talk about for the two of us in the way that our Nickelodeon viewership and age gap will kind of like span this entire era of Nickelodeon.
Yeah, we're 9 years apart. So you are the generation that the story begins with.
Yes.
And I'm all the way from that point current.
Yeah, you're right in the middle there, like the target of all this stuff, I'd say. So taking it back for sure, like when I am an elder millennial for sure, and I was definitely a Nickelodeon watcher. When I was a kid, I would watch TV all the time if I could.
Yeah, we were both big TV kids.
I think if, you know, hey, I liked to do other things, but if you let me watch TV all day and night, I probably would have. And my favorite thing to watch was Nickelodeon.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about the wars between Disney and Nickelodeon at this time. Mm-hmm. But I definitely switched between the two.
Yeah, I watched Nickelodeon all the time. That was my favorite thing to watch.
But did you watch All That?
So All That was not my favorite show on Nickelodeon at all, though. My favorite show was definitely Ren and Stimpy, hands down. It's probably everybody's favorite show. Also a subject of a very serious cancellation story in John Kay.
I don't even know that story. My parents loved my dad loved Ren and Stimpy, and so I watched reruns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, later. Ren and Stimpy was, I mean, such a, I mean, I think it was a lot of people's favorite, and that one was definitely my favorite. But I watched everything on Nickelodeon because you watched everything. There wasn't like you could skip it, right? So
yeah.
All that definitely fell into that category of show that you had to watch to get to your other favorite show for me. Because I never thought all that was very funny. I just, the humor in it, dude, was not my thing. Dan will defend himself by saying that this humor is for kids and kids thought this was funny. And I don't know. I was a kid. I didn't think it was funny.
I thought a lot of it was funny. I didn't necessarily watch a lot of all that. But if you've never seen all that was basically the kids' version of Saturday Night Live. So they had a lot of different kids in and out of the show, and they were like skits.
And all that was Dan Schneider. That was his show. He created this show, and he was one of the main writers on this show. The pilot came out in 1994, and it was exactly that. It was pitched as Saturday Night Live for kids, a sketch comedy show for kids that would air on Saturday nights that featured a musical guest.
And even though Herman wasn't a fan of it, the show was a big deal. Kids fucking loved it.
It was definitely
a
big hit.
And it wasn't just a big deal for the fans. It was a big deal for people who were able to get on it because it launched a lot of careers.
Absolutely. And they had very famous guests as well, very famous musical guests.
I specifically remember it, like for me, I didn't watch it a lot, but my impression that I took from it was that it had a lot of black kids on it, and there wasn't a lot of black kids on TV at the time. I remember thinking like it was a show that had a variety of kids on it. That was something that had like attracted me to it. The few times that I had watched it, there was a variety of humor, a variety of characters and kids. But I came into it at the end when Amanda had come in at the end and got her spinoff.
The musical guests, there's a number of famous rap and R&B groups. I noted looking at the season one guests, they include artists like TLC, Brandy and Aaliyah, Coolio. They also include original Bad Boy artist Craig Mack and Usher.
Okay. Well, to reel it back, I'll talk a little bit about my relationship with Nickelodeon. And like I said, I came in the later eras. I specifically remember my family enjoying watching the Amanda Show together. Cool guy. Love you, Dan. It was one of the few shows that my stepdad could tolerate and would sit in, and he just thought it was fucking hilarious. There's some very specific skits that I remember, like the stoner surfer dude.
It's like Totally Something.
Totally Kyle.
Yeah, Totally Kyle. That was it. That's a great name for a character.
He reminded me of Spicoli, and I'm always a fan of like a Spicoli archetype. And I remember like her hillbilly skit. I don't know what it was about Amanda, but she was hilarious. I related to her. She was not far from my age, and she looked similar to me in some ways. So she was a character that I had connected with. But that was in my earlier years, whereas the spinoff from that came was Drake and Josh, and I was a huge Drake and Josh fan. It's gonna take some time to realize. I loved that show. I've watched every episode of that show. And then the spinoff from there is the little sister on Drake and Josh got her own show, iCarly, and I watched all of iCarly, and that was into my teen years. And I was very much involved in the internet. Like, and so iCarly was a show that talked about kids being famous YouTubers, essentially, and being on the internet. So I loved that character. I loved that these kids could be famous on the internet. Obviously, I idolized that. And then from there was the spinoff from iCarly's best friend on there, Sam. She got her spinoff, Sam and Cat. And that was where my relationship with Nickelodeon ended. I never got into Sam and Cat. That was after I was no longer a kid. So Sam and Cat and Victorious, I didn't watch. But plug in there, Zoe 101 with Jamie Lynn Spears. Huge fan of that because I had loved Britney Spears and her movie Crossroads that had come out, you know, around that time. So I didn't even know that Britney Spears had a little sister until she came on that show. And her pregnancy that ended the show was huge news and big conversation between, you know, me and my girlfriends and me and my family. Like, oh, how could this girl on a kids' TV show end up pregnant?
Scandalous.
Yeah, and I remember that scandal breaking out. So that's where I age into the Nickelodeon world, except I just didn't really catch Victorious or Sam and Cat. But I imagine Sam and Cat is not much different than iCarly.
It's interesting because those are all of Dan Schneider's shows specifically,
yes,
right? Like those are shows that Dan Schneider created and was head writer for. And for me, my era of Nickelodeon ended right before all of those shows. I aged out of Nickelodeon. I have never seen a single episode of Zoe 101 or Drake and Josh or none of those shows.
I do have to share one more thing, as I did go to a live recording of Nickelodeon once.
That's awesome. And that's like such a dream, like watching those shows being recorded at Nick Studios, whether it's Double Dare or something like that, where it's like, I want to be on that show so bad. Oh, I had one friend who was on that show too. I was so jealous.
Yeah, I got to watch like
go
the
to
kids
space
be...
camp, win a trip to space camp.
I got to watch a kid get slimed. And
get
I remember
a piece of the aggro crag.
I remember my mom being like, you should yell really loud and like dance so that they pull you on. And I don't know why I was like shy and shut down. I think I was really just like unsure about the slime.
Oh, yeah. Nobody, you don't want to get slimed. It looks awful. I mean, it's great on TV, but. I mean,
and you just don't know. Like, we'll get into this about like kind of how it became like Fear Factor stuff. But I really didn't know what I was signing up for. So I didn't want to get up there and find out I had to eat something weird or do something I would suck at and fall on my face or something.
Embarrassed on TV.
Yeah. Or just in general, just, you know, it's a huge stage. It was full of people. So, I mean, Nickelodeon. We'll also get into this. It really is Hollywood for kids. It was a big deal when I went to that live recording. But yeah, so this new documentary came out. It was called Quiet on Set. I felt like the internet spoiled quite a bit for me before we turned it on, but it didn't because I thought I knew everything going in. But
yeah, a lot of these stories were things that you may have seen rumored before on the internet, but the documentary certainly goes into detail with the interviews from a number of former cast members from a lot of these shows, and then also dropping this one major bombshell, which is releasing the identity of the abuser Brian Peck's victim. And we learn who that is in episode 3 of the show. It's a big reveal.
I definitely went into the documentary too thinking like, okay, I've seen these shows and I know these characters. I'm not doubting what's happened necessarily. Like there's a lot of conversation about foot fetish and inappropriate scenes. But I definitely went in thinking, okay, are they kind of stretching? Like are they kind of pulling things that are would not fly now but were pretty normal then? Like that they could go either way, like these things are
could this
weird,
be taken out of context,
taken,
or something?
Yeah, to try to prove a point because we did have a bombshell of a story and now these things back it up. So I kind of went in a little bit skeptical, and holy shit, it blew my mind. It is very, in my opinion, a clear-cut case. So yeah, if you haven't watched it, there's 4 episodes out right now.
Yeah, at time of recording, and there's a 5th coming. So
yeah, so there's a 5th coming. I think it's on HBO or...
Yeah, it's
ID
and HBO Max. Yeah, and we'll see, of course, if there's coming developments as far as how some of the people involved and their relationships to the other people, how they may develop as well.
So whether you've watched the documentary or not, we're going to just kind of go through... We have some commentary on it and some thoughts on it, but we're mostly going to report what has come out and what has happened since with some of the statements from people involved or people in their circles. And then I have some extra commentary on Drake and Drake and Josh's relationship and Drake's other cancellation before all of this happened, where he had a court case where he was charged with child endangerment. So we had actually mentioned this in the Diddy Part 3 episode, where I had talked about hurt people hurt people, and I used Drake Bell as an example, that he had obviously gone through a lot of trauma and then possibly hurt somebody in return. And I actually have some completely different thoughts on that now that I have gone a little bit deeper into that case. So
that's going to be one of our common themes again that comes back with these kind of relationships between victims and abusers, and victims becoming abusers themselves. And then where do we stand trying to draw a line on the morality of that? And
I think Drake's... almost across the board, every abuser in the world has been abused in their life.
Right.
That's an uncomfortable conversation because we want to stand strong against perpetrators, and but actually I think humanizing them is important, because nobody is all good or all bad. Good and evil doesn't really exist. All humans are capable of all human things, and that's really dark and ugly. But I think
These are people that are, they certainly are justifying what they're doing to themselves.
These are people. These are humans. We're all capable of hurting people, hating people, having dark thoughts, doing dark things. And I think talking about it and the things that lead up to it are what help keep us in the lane of good. So I think we're going to start off talking about Brian Peck, right? Who is not related to Josh Peck. That is a big thing on the internet. Josh Peck from Drake and Josh, and Brian Peck, same last name, but coincidence. They are not related. I don't know if you needed to know that.
We're going to talk about some of the things that were controversial about what took place on some of these sets and why they may have been problematic.
Well, and there's two parts, because there's the part where the children on set experienced things, as well as the adults who were writing, who were working in the behind the scenes, also had experiences.
These shows were specifically known for having quote unquote edgy humor. And there are a lot of different scenes that had thematic elements that would have been considered, how appropriate is this for children's television?
And the thing that I notice about that humor the most is that you know that whoever is coming up with these jokes can default to, oh, if you think that's inappropriate, it's because your mind is in the gutter. I didn't mean it that way. All of these jokes are framed that way, right?
Yeah, kind of. They're all things that I think that if you're a kid watching them, then you might not get what they're referencing. But anybody else, it's very obvious. The visuals and what it's showing, it's very clear. And
I mean, well, I had that experience watching back, because I watched all these shows and those things didn't cross my mind. And then I watched them back as an adult, and it was very obvious what it was. And it wasn't because my mind is in the gutter. It's because it's very obvious what they're doing. And they're not one-off things. We see themes in the humor.
Exactly.
He does the same thing over and over.
There's the added layer that it's this humor that is being written by adults for children.
Yeah, these shows are targeted to children.
One scene that's shown several times is the Noseboy sketch.
Yeah, what was the kid's name?
Was it Leon Frierson?
Yeah, and he and the kid who is in the scene, he comes on and he...
Yeah, describe the Noseboy scene for us, please.
What was so heartbreaking for me was watching him rewatch himself in this scene, because I've experienced a lot of sexual trauma as a child and I've never had to watch it back on video, thank God. And so I had a lot of empathy for these poor kids who not only are they watching it back and reflecting back on it as an adult, but the whole world is watching reruns of this shit. It's all over YouTube. I just want to take a moment to recognize what all of these now adults, but kid actors, are going through right now since this documentary came out. They are reliving so much shit. And they're being asked to make statements on something really big. So I just want to recognize and honor all of the victims that have come forward and the victims that haven't and are being harassed or triggered. It's a lot. So I just want to say I love you to all of these child actors right now, because it's a big deal for me as someone who experienced similar things. But Noseboy came out. What is this kid's name? Can we not call him Noseboy?
Leon Frierson.
Okay, so he comes out to speak on this, And, you know, he talks about some of the racism and the group, the cliques and all of that. But specifically the scene, he is a very small child. He has not, like, gone through puberty. So he's young and he's in a full leotard. He speaks on how he's uncomfortable with the way this leotard is hugging his body. It's showing everything. And how much do you really want to show when you're an 11-year-old boy? And he is wearing a full-on skin-tight leotard that's, like, yellow. And they put this, right, a prosthetic nose, yeah, on his face to make it, like, enlarged, so and...
A big, long nose.
A big, long, wide nose. It reminds me of... What's that Steve Martin movie? Roxanne.
Yeah, Roxanne.
That was the movie that made me decide that I loved men with big noses. You're welcome, babe. but... It was just very, like, dramatic and exaggerated in every way. And then they took that similar shape and pasted them on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. And they don't look like noses on his shoulders, yeah, at all. Not at all. It is dick and balls. It is, yeah, dick and balls, man.
I mean, that's what he says. It looks like there were a penis and testicles on my shoulders.
There's no denying. It doesn't, yeah, look like a nose. That's, I don't know what to tell you. Like. Go look it up. It doesn't look like it. And then I don't know what happens in the rest of the scene, but he's nose boy. He's whatever.
He says, I'm allergic to, I'm Captain Big Nose. Somehow the scene progresses to, I'm allergic to asteroids.
To which he then sneezes, but they don't, mm-hmm, show the sneeze. They just cut to the scene where this slime hits this woman's face, and it is undoubtedly a cum shot.
Yes, cum shot.
And again, it's this humor that's framed of, like, well, if you see dick and balls in a cum shot, you're the pervert, right?
Yeah.
So I guess in a one-off situation, you could, like, brush that off. But this is not one-off situation, because we continue to see cum shots in various forms.
Yeah, this seems to
in
be...
In every show done by Dan...
Yeah, by Dan Schneider. Exactly. This seems to be a common theme in Dan Schneider's comedy writing, is both using inappropriate, very sexual material in jokes that are specifically for young kids, but also specifically cum shot facial scenes being recreated in a number of different ways. And we see that with Jamie Lynn Spears and the goo face scene, and Ariana Grande and the water bottle scene, and a lot more. There's a bunch more, but those are some big ones. There are a lot more.
Can I kind of just run through them? Because I think, yeah, it's relevant.
Absolutely.
Before we get into the sexualized thing, let's reel back to the racist parts too, because there's things that are just absolutely blatantly racist. And I'm not excusing it by saying that it was a different time, but I'm definitely saying that there would be better standards in place now, that it's shit that would never fly. And they do a skit where he is, like, drug dealing cookies, like Girl Scout cookies. Like, I got the goods, and they've got him, and they make him a drug dealer of cookies. Like, total racial stereotyping.
The girly cookies sketch.
You know, it's obviously racial stereotyping, and of all the kids to do this skit, they chose the black kid to be the drug dealer. The other scenes that come up outside of the sexual scenes, you know, we talked about the Fear Factor stuff. They were forced to do scenes that were really, like, physically uncomfortable or borderline torture. There's one that they talk about, the coffee and sugar skit. They have the kids go up and they have these, like, big tubes, and, like, one is coffee and one is sugar, and they have to, like, fill their mouths until it's coming out, and it's, like, literally, like, causing their mouths to bleed and shit. It's absolute torture, and they're, like, making these kids do these horrible scenes, Fear Factor type shit.
Yeah, those are the on-air dares. They do that in, like,
for
this,
All That.
No, yeah, that was in, like, the second version of All That, kind of with, like, the later cast.
From there, the sexualized scenes are, there's a scene with Ariana Grande, and there's a whole thing about her on the wood. It's, like, obviously, like, a boner reference. And juicing a potato, where they have her, like, squeeze it and try to, like, essentially, like, get cum out of a penis. Like, that is what the scene looks like. They have, like, a pickle boy glory hole scene. the Zoe 101 show is highly sexualized in every scene. They have the girls, they're like supposed to be 12, 13 years old or whatever. They're in bikinis all the time. They're doing things with their bras. They have, again, goo cum shot looking scenes on their faces all the time. There's the Ariana Grande video of her like drinking a water bottle upside down that also looks like cum all over her face. This is not one-off stuff. So I feel like maybe we didn't make it. Herman, who is Dan Schneider?
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
I'm
trying.
Oh,
yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Look, we all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit.
Don't play with this shit.
I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it.
Take that shit serious.
Dan Schneider is the creator of all that and the creator of a number of some of the most famous Nickelodeon shows that came after that we just mentioned.
But where did he come from?
He was an actor.
He was a child actor, right?
Yeah, he kind of played the fat kid.
I kind of got the vibe that he kind of got sick of being written as the fat kid and started moving into some stand-up and some writing. And he became a writer, and is he a director or a producer or both?
He was the executive producer and head writer on Amanda's show and on most of those shows. He would have been the most important person both in the writer's room and also as far as the production of the show.
So his journey from his own acting career, by the time that he came on to all of that, his importance really rose at that point.
Dan has a huge hit with all that. He has like a huge hit on his hands. And from there, he discovers a young comedic actress that he thinks has big star potential. And he discovers her via, do you remember, Lorena, the sketch?
Yeah, he found himself at the Laugh Factory, where this young girl at the age of 9, very young, very cute, comes on and does this comedic skit about a pimple in her nose that she cannot pop. She made Dan laugh and he saw something in her and he was like, I need her on all that. So he brought her on all that and she is Amanda Bynes.
So begins the career of Amanda Bynes on
television. Were you a fan of Amanda?
See, that would have probably been right around the end of when I was watching. So Amanda Bynes was not really somebody who I knew about at the time. And no, not really. Looking back, though, and like watching her sketches and then like watching some of the stuff from this is like, wow, she was really talented. She was a really funny and charismatic young actress.
Absolutely. She made me laugh. I loved Amanda Bynes. And like I said, she was close to my age, so I followed her through her movies. And then honestly, I kind of forgot about her until like maybe a year ago. And I was like, what happened to Amanda Bynes? But yeah, she came on all that. She did a couple seasons before all that ended. And Dan decided to take her on to her own show, The Amanda Show.
Yeah, which began in 1999.
And some background on Amanda is that her parents, particularly her father, was very involved in the management of her career. He was there all the time. And he, at first, had a very good working relationship with Dan Schneider. And even all of the other cast members said that she sort of had a privilege in this way in regards to her career because Amanda's dad would go in the room with Dan and influence what he wrote and how he casted her. And he was very involved in her building a career with him. Amanda became their baby together.
There was really this environment of high expectations for Amanda and a lot of pressure. And that seemed to come from her dad and from Dan as well.
Yeah. And so they worked together and they had this great relationship, which also meant that there was, for lack of better words, some favoritism towards Amanda. And Dan and Amanda had started creating their own relationship. They were always together. They're always hugging each other. Mm-hmm. They're always seen together. And it's often spoken about how Dan had two sides to him, a good side and a bad side. And I think Amanda had favoritism in that she experienced the good side of Dan, as in he was nice to her and gave her lots of scenes and was not harsh or mean to her in the ways that he was to other cast members.
And that also speaks to another thing that's commonly brought up about Dan that was inappropriate that took place in the workplace, which was that he was noted for being very close, like physically with Amanda, that he seemed that they were often in physical contact. And one thing that seemed to happen all the time was that Dan Schneider would often solicit massages from different people on set, from the female cast, from writers, from a lot of different people. And
with bribes, he would be like, oh,
that was part of it.
I'll give you more scenes or I'll boost your career. He would give these very enticing things to come give him massages.
They say that someone was always massaging Dan.
Yeah. So there's plenty of pictures of Amanda with her arm around Dan, and she's like 12 years old.
One thing that Amanda Bynes became famous for was creating these characters, right, which she would often create with Dan. And this is also something that became controversial as far as the content that some of these characters got into. One of these characters that was a recurring character on the show was named Penelope Taint.
Penelope Taint. It's crazy because I knew that. I loved the Penelope character. She was sort of like Amanda. She is Amanda with a wig on. Think Hannah Montana. And she is like a hyper fan of Amanda. And so she would be like obsessed with Amanda and do all this crazy stuff, stalking her on the computer and stuff, and like know everything about her. And she was just crazy about Amanda. And her name was Penelope. And I loved her. And it was like, oh yeah, there's Penelope. Wait, Penelope Taint? Hearing that through my adult ears, I was like, what the fuck was I watching?
It's an odd reference to tack on there.
Yeah, why not anything else? Like, of all things that they could choose, it was Penelope Taint? Like, what the fuck?
I mean, it seems like the purpose of the humor is very clear, which is to tack on this adult-themed name into a children's show where the children who are the main audience are not going to get the reference.
Yeah, and like you had said, you didn't grow up in the Amanda Show era.
Yeah, I never heard of Penelope Taint until I watched this documentary.
But the Amanda Show is huge. It was so fun. It was so cool. Amanda Bynes really dictated pre-teen fashion, not teen fashion. She wasn't Britney Spears. She wasn't Christina Aguilera, but she was like, think about how Mary-Kate and Ashley influenced preteens right before her. She was the one influencing how we did our hair. I remember specifically, like, she always had like the little rubber bands in the front with the little ponytails and like, and the butterfly clips and like the colored strands in her hair. Think like layered tank tops and what would have been cool.
I definitely remember this era of fashion. So
but being 12. So it's like, okay, well, the older girls older than me could wear like their low rise jeans with their thongs hanging out. But what about a little bit younger? Right. And so that was Amanda for us, for that age group, was the preteen group. She was beautiful and she just got more and more beautiful with age, and I think that also made her very vulnerable in this industry because she was drop dead gorgeous.
Having watched it through the documentary and now, but not having watched it at the time, I was struck by the fact that I did find her to be very charismatic and funny in her roles, and she's very talented.
Yes, huge big smile. She just really had a light about her. Like, that sounds really cheesy, but you were happy to see her on the screen for sure. And absolutely shamelessly silly, which is something that girls aren't often given permission to do. And she was a very shamelessly silly girl. And that is actually a theme in a lot of the Nickelodeon shows, with the girls. We're talking about iCarly, the little sister on Drake and Josh, and Sam and Kat. It's all about being very silly, like YouTube humor, right? Like,
yeah.
Gross, funny, it's pranks.
Very slapstick.
Yes.
Silliness.
And girls weren't out. Those characters. Like, you know, Zoe 101 was a little bit more traditional in that she was more of like the pretty popular girl who gets to like explore, and she's cool and sweet and into boys. But like Amanda Bynes was just there to be like fucking hilarious and stupid all the time. And girls need permission to do that more.
Totally. There's one more scene that I wanted to talk about from the Amanda show.
Are you going to talk about the hot tub?
And that's Amanda's jacuzzi from 2002.
Right. And I actually don't remember this at the time. So it was interesting to watch it as an adult because I'm not sure what I would have thought of it as a kid. Or if I would have even known it was him in the video. Like, who was Dan, you know?
Well, he introduces himself. It's like this breaking the fourth wall scene that is called Amanda's jacuzzi. And it takes place in 2002, which is the last year of the Amanda show. So this is kind of at the end of the run of this show. And it features Amanda Bynes in a swimsuit in a jacuzzi and Dan Schneider, who during the dialogue of this scene identifies himself as Dan Schneider, the executive producer and head writer of the Amanda show. And they have a little back and forth where they joke about the fact that he wrote the dialogue that they're speaking at that very moment. And they proceed to eat spaghetti in the jacuzzi together.
And he's like fully clothed.
He's fully clothed. He's wearing sunglasses. And she's wearing kind of those signature hairstyle, like, yes, with the colored clips that you just mentioned.
I don't know how to feel about this scene because, again, it's one of those things where it's like, if it's a one-off thing, you wouldn't think much of it. Girls are allowed to wear bikinis. She's wearing a bikini at an appropriate time. She's in a jacuzzi. This would be a funny scene to have with the producer of like, here's the producer of the show and he wrote this that we're talking right now. But like when you add it all up, it is extremely concerning that he wrote a scene where he could be in a hot tub with her.
He was certainly the one who had all of the power in creating that situation, which he says outright in the scene itself. It gives the viewer the experience that they are viewing a situation that is being forced, that maybe the humor in the sketch itself is that it's like coercive and that this teenager is being coerced into being in a hot tub with her executive producer and head writer. It's very strange.
Yeah. So all of this is to lead up to say that Amanda Bynes' career at this point, she's on fire. She is the queen of Nickelodeon at this point in time. And he knows that she has all the potential in the world to move forward. And we see a couple of huge things happen with Amanda Bynes right at this point. He starts putting a wedge between her and her parents, planting some ideas that they are too overprotective of her, too involved in her career. And Amanda wants to, one, spread her wings a bit in her career, start moving into maybe more adult type roles or take on her own show, or maybe she wants to work more. Add on the layer that she's a teenager and wants more freedom. What does that look like, right? She's the hottest star. Does she want a boyfriend? Does she want to go out to parties? Who even knows all of the layers of the freedoms that Amanda was looking for?
Does she want control over the money she's making?
That too. But the thing that we do know that is behind this is that Dan is guiding her even deeper into this need for freedom. And she pursues an emancipation from her parents. This causes a huge rift, not just between her and her parents, but her parents and Dan. And remember, her dad had a very good, close working relationship with Dan up to this point. But I have a feeling that maybe Dan had some favoritism towards Amanda, and he may have wanted to be closer to her in various ways. And her parents were a barrier to that, not just with her career, but the amount of time that he could spend with her, especially alone. And Amanda actually ran to Dan's house, which directly involved him in the court case for her emancipation. And so He creates this wedge. She pursues the emancipation. She goes to the court to pursue it. And it's denied, which is interesting because emancipation, when a child can prove that they can financially take care of themselves, I won't say it usually happens, but oftentimes child actors get emancipations right around this age. So the fact that it was denied is interesting to me. I would love to be able to get these records somehow of how all of this evolved. But it failed, and that then put her parents in tight lock of her. And they continued managing her career. So she goes on to do a couple big movies. So there was Big Fat Liar, which is a big movie in 2002. What a Girl Wants. She also does Robots. That was also a big animated movie. And She's the Man and Hairspray. Those were her big, huge hits, all in a couple of years. But because of the broken relationship between him and her parents, he was taken off the set. But his name, like, remained on, in writing, on the show. But he was not working with her directly anymore because her parents had put a boundary between them two. I am going to get a little bit into some of the Amanda Bynes conspiracies. What do you know about Amanda Bynes now? Have you Googled her recently, Herman?
We've been following Amanda Bynes and following what's been going on with Amanda Bynes and trying to put the pieces together of what is going on with Amanda Bynes and what is the truth or not. And I guess that's been a little difficult.
We can first talk about what Amanda Bynes looks like right now, and that she looks not okay. She is clearly not sober. She has multiple hit and runs. She was arrested in 2012 for a DUI. She was arrested in 2013 for reckless endangerment and criminal possession of marijuana. During the 2013 incident, she had tossed the bong out of the window while she was driving. She's a hot mess. And she has these YouTube videos.
Don't throw the bong out the window.
I mean, if her worst crime is weed, you know how I feel about that. But I don't think that that's all that's going on with Amanda. She's not doing well.
She just doesn't look great.
She obviously is not doing well financially because I think we'll get into this, but I'll just say now, like, Nickelodeon doesn't pay these kids well. They don't get residuals from these episodes. So the money that she made, that if she had any control over it in the first place, is definitely long gone. So she doesn't have money. And she makes these YouTube videos where she has said a lot of wild things. It's hard to know what's true and what's not, of course.
Yeah.
And her parents are still trying to do damage control of her social medias and such. And that brings us to the conspiracy of her social media.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on what has come out with the supposed fake Twitter of hers?
So you're talking about, what is it called? It's, what's the name?
I want to say it's like Ashley Banks?
Ashley Banks.
Is it Ashley Banks, like Fresh Prince?
Twitter
it is.
Account.
It's Ashley Banks.
There's this Twitter account, and it claimed to be Amanda Bynes. They went as far as to post an ID photo of Amanda Bynes that appears to be Amanda Bynes' actual ID. Whether that proves that this person who is posting these posts is indeed Amanda Bynes is unconfirmed, but gosh, that seems like pretty good evidence, so it's kind of hard to say.
So
what
her parents,
kind of things did
Well, so
did
her parents
claim?
Have a conservatorship on her since her last arrest in 2013, which means that they control her official social media. So she doesn't actually post on, like, her official Instagram or whatever. So she or whoever is behind this, quote, fake Twitter is claiming to not believe anything on this official page. The official page says that's not the real Amanda. Don't listen to it. She says, well, I'm under the conservatorship. I don't, you know, have any rights to my money. So don't believe that page. This is really me. Here's my ID. And some of the things that have been posted on there, some of it's fucking true. She talks about other creeps in the industry. She talks about John Travolta. I didn't even know. I looked up John Travolta's a creep. I didn't know. She calls him out on it, right?
What does she say?
John Travolta has been there's police reports, yeah, from a 21-year-old massage therapist who says that John Travolta was indecently exposing himself and groping him against his will. And now there's 4 men who have come out against him for sexual abuse. I mean, that's a whole nother deep dive, but all I'm saying is that's not out of the fucking nowhere. She talks about how the industry is crazy, how she doesn't have any rights to her money. Also, when I'm saying she, I'm saying whoever is behind this account. Yeah, I kind of probably lean towards it might be her, but I mean, this could be anything, right? But she also claims that her father molested her and that she got pregnant at 13 by her boss, who would have been Dan Schneider.
Mm-hmm. There
and that she was forced into having an abortion.
There are some bombshell allegations, if true.
And like that the results of this abortion led to her being unable to ever have children. And Amanda Bynes is in her late 30s with no children. And that doesn't mean anything, but like, will she never have children? That would lend to some credibility to this claim that she had an abortion that affected her fertility at such a young age. I don't know what to think about this, but she doesn't say anything that is so outlandish I wouldn't believe it. She says a bunch of things on this page that would put a lot of pieces together. She has not been okay since then. She looks like the product of what this fake Twitter claims has happened to her.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think? Yeah, 10, it's Amanda. 1, it's definitely not Amanda. Where do you fall on that scale in your personal belief?
5.
Oh, I'm a 9.5.
No, 5 for me.
It feels like Britney to me. That's all I'm saying. So yeah, once Dan was pushed out of production after Amanda's emancipation, he went back to Nickelodeon, where he kind of already had a reputation for being an asshole in the writer's room, too.
Yeah, kind of after this situation with writing Big Fat Liar, Dan goes back to Nickelodeon and goes back to All That with an all-new cast on All That as writer and executive producer. He's head of everything. Dan is God. Dan is the big shot and has all the power on set. And so he is the one who really controls the content, how it's made, and also is in control of just kind of like the set environment and how everything works.
Yeah, and in the documentary, I'm just going to be honest, I was a little disappointed at how much time they spent talking about these writers being victims, because they were adults, and I feel like, yes, they were victims, but they also had a big role in protecting him as an abuser towards these children, and that wasn't really discussed, so I'm just, like, inserting my opinion there. But basically, the writer's room was all men, except they brought in 2 female writers, and the big takeaway is that he made them share a salary, but there are some corroborating stories here where we can see a theme in his like really grotesque sexual behavior, and he does these like bizarre pranks.
It seems like that's a really common theme as far as like what's going on set behind the scene, is that Dan kind of runs the show as far as how everything goes. And one thing that Dan likes to do is make jokes and goof around, and he likes to prank people, and what Dan says goes. And so one of the things that he liked to do was he would email people. You'd be sitting in your computer and you get an email from Dan that says, "Say hammers out loud right now." And if you don't say it, you get another email. It'll be like, "Say it. Say it, say it, say it." And he would just,
assuming
like,
they're being filmed, I guess, and he can see them.
Or just purely for his amusement. And these type of things would progress to be, they would be like, "Oh, say I'm an idiot." And then the female writers would also say that he would force them to say things like, "Oh, I'm a slut."
The one that like really, I know I'm always personalizing my own trauma here, but Dan is a Capricorn. We didn't cover the signs. Dan is a Capricorn. And one of the people in my life who abused me was also a Capricorn. And I found it very odd that these 2 people, Dan and my abuser, did this exact same thing where they would make you do really grotesque things and claim that they would pay you for it. And they would be these like horrifically humiliating things also we know that Dan has like a foot thing and this was like involved in my trauma. And of course he would never pay them for them. And they would be things like, okay, eat two pints of ice cream in 15 minutes. Or they would be as horrible as like making a woman who they were talking about girls in high school because they're writing a show about girls in high school. And he goes, well, why don't you get on the table and bend over and like pretend you're getting fucked while talking about this girl in high school? And she's like, no. And he's like, no, you're going to do it. And is threatening her or bribing her in these ways and puts her on the spot. And she feels like she's going to lose her job. And so she does it. And she says that she's like really ashamed. She also feels really gross about what she did. She doesn't like to reflect on it. She doesn't like to talk about that. She did it. It happened. He did it to her. Just really horrible things going on in the writer's room environment.
He would try and get them to eat the ice cream, which sounds like the gallon challenge. Remember that from high school? You try and get your dumb friends to drink a gallon of milk. You say, like, you can't drink a gallon of milk. And of
That's
course,
disgusting.
Like, teenage boys, of course I can, but nobody can. Spoiler alert, nobody can finish that gallon of milk.
Anyways, he's just kind of an idiot. He's got, like, kid humor, but also, like, adult gross humor. Dan is interesting. But yeah, again, I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about the writers. They did seek some justice there. They had a lot to say about their situation, but they sure didn't really cop a lot to what they inevitably had to have seen going on with him in this environment and how he is directing children and alone with them. And if he's doing this to them, what are they doing to the kids? And they just weren't the victims to me in the story as much as the kids.
This era of Nickelodeon is really basically like a renaissance for Nickelodeon and for Dan Schneider. And Dan creates a number of hit shows for Nickelodeon that
you may remember. What happens is he brings on Drake and then Josh onto all that. And they're such a hit together as a pair, and Nickelodeon is looking for a new, like, bro comedy. And he's like, oh, well, I have this bro couple, Drake and Josh, and they should have their own show. So Drake and Josh came out of all that, and then iCarly came out of Drake and Josh because iCarly is the little sister from Drake and Josh. Then comes Sam and Kat, and Sam and Kat came from iCarly because Sam was iCarly's friend. In between that, we got Zoe 101, and the last to come was Victorious, which I aged out, but that is where Ariana Grande had begun as a young teenager.
Okay.
So tell me a bit about how Dan's career is flying off, but his mood and attitude is flying off the handles.
Dan Schneider is the person who is in creative control of these shows. He's the one who is running the scene at the same time working for Dan behind the scenes. It's just becoming more and more difficult to work for Dan. He is controlling. He expects people to go along with his type of humor and the things that he's doing. But if he thinks that you're not doing a good job, then Dan is going to let you know. He's belittling. He will say awful things about you. He will threaten to take you down and ruin your career. It's very clear that Dan is in control. Dan runs everything, and that Dan is the person who makes the decisions about what goes on these shows. Dan will also say that, you know, he has a number of other people above him, but from what the people who are on set say, they say that Dan was very much in control. Dan is God.
And the cast members say that there was always sort of this expectation like, oh, he's being silly or he's being annoying or he's harassing you. A lot of these young girls on the set, they show little clips of him just kind of like violating their space and stuff. And their poor faces as like 12-year-old, 13-year-old girls reminds me of like a grown woman in a bar and some dude is just like hitting on you relentlessly, and you know that if you reject him too hard he might flip out or assault you or humiliate you or make a scene. So you sort of like play it off like, haha, okay, you're funny, da da da. And that's so how these young girls are already learning how to deal with like a pest of a man. It's identical in behavior. And so even though we get a lot of pictures and clips of these people hugging him and posing for pictures, I feel like it's all a reflection of them sort of appeasing his behavior and staying on his good side, because it's either you're on his good side or you're on his bad side.
Something that's repeated over and over is, one, that Dan has a good side and a bad side, and you know which side you're on at any given time, and that there are favored people in group, out group as well. And another thing that is a repeated and that is another everything's canceled theme that we see over and over is that this is an open secret, that the abuse that's taking place on set is something that everybody knows. And either you're prepared for this and this is just how things go in the entertainment industry at Nickelodeon, or you're not.
What's more devastating about an open secret is that it means that a lot of adults were aware of a lot of these things for a very long time, and children were the victims. And they don't know, like, what is an open secret to children? That's just what's normal to them. That's what's so sad. So I kind of gave a rundown of the highlight reels of horrible scenes. Let's get a little bit more into this era.
So in this time, in addition to the abuse that's taking place on set, the inappropriate content continues on the shows that Dan Schneider is head writer for. And so Zoe 101 is one of those shows. And one of the actresses on those shows is now a very outspoken critic of Dan, of these shows, and of the abuse that took place or that she experienced on these shows. And that is former Zoe 101 actress Alexa Nichols. Alexa Nichols talks about her character on Zoe 101 and how she felt like her character was this like typical male gaze female. They'd dress her up in short skirts and revealing outfits, that she essentially describes herself as being kid eye candy on the show.
She says that Dan would sit in on her wardrobe meetings. He was the person who made the decisions on what she wore.
And there's also a fairly infamous scene that took place on Zoe 101, and that is the backpack episode that we mentioned previously.
Remind me, because I'm starting to blur them together. So what was the backpack scene?
It involves squirting goo on Jamie Lynn Spears' face. I don't know how they get there, but that's what happens, is that a green goo is shot onto Jamie Lynn Spears' face. Right, I mean, she's hitting her face. It's another cum shot scene. It's pretty direct. That's what it is. It's an excuse to have another scene that is just a cum shot. And Zoe 101, in addition to that, also has a number of other just like innuendo heavy or sexual content. There are a lot of shots of feet. Feet are featured prominently.
Yeah, everything from just like having them suck their own toes, zooming in on their feet. And I grew up in the era of this. Having fans write Nickelodeon on the bottom of their feet and send in pictures. And it's not like he then featured everyone's feet on TV. He just collected thousands of children's feet photos in this way.
That's crazy.
Everything about this is so borderline. It's literally a hair away from like sex trafficking, from the cast members themselves in soliciting them for massages and making them do inappropriate scenes on camera, whether they were aware of what it looked like or not, to literally soliciting feet fetish photos for himself of the fan base from children.
And in addition, there were just a lot of scenes on Zoe 101 of like close-up of them licking things, tongues licking, and lots of things squirting on faces. It just, this seemed to happen over and over on this show and on these shows.
Also, something about Zoe 101 that kind of strikes me too, if he had anything to do with the actual like writing of the plot of the show.
He's the head writer.
Right. So he created a show about a 13-year-old girl who leaves her parents' home and lives on her own and then sexualizes her. He isolates her from her parents and puts her in a boarding school. You never see the parents. And it's Britney Spears' little sister of all people. You're talking about, like, the hottest chick in the world, Britney Spears. Now you have her baby sister, who's more than 10 years younger than her, starring as, like, this 13-year-old being an adult. She shops on her own. She goes out to restaurants on her own. She is with all of her friends. There's no parents around. And now we're making them do dirty things in a dorm room, essentially. He's basically making college girl porn out of this 13-year-old girl. It, as a plot, that's weird. That is a significant part to me because I remember the show and it making me want to be living on my own. It grew that fantasy for me.
Yeah, it's something that's supposed to be aspirational for the preteen audience that is expected to be watching this.
An interesting nuance with the Jamie Lynn situation too with Britney is that she was brought on to the show as Britney Spears' little sister at the time that Britney Spears was being fetishized for being a perceived virgin. She was supposed to be America's sexy virgin, whatever the fuck that is. And Jamie was brought on as the little sister, kind of with the expectation of the same image. And she's put on this show as, you know, a 12, 13-year-old little girl who's a virgin, but then being sexualized. It's just kind of an interesting parallel between her and Britney and how our culture perceived and treated both of them. So when she got pregnant as a teen, it was such a scandal, and I think it was highlighted even more because of who her sister was and the image that we had put on Britney. And then we know how this all ends for Jamie Lynn. She does a couple seasons of the show. It does great. And she was 16 and pregnant. And this was a huge scandal. And it was all put on her. She experienced all that shame. She was sent away. She had her pregnancy in private and in isolation. She didn't really make any statements about it. We just knew she was pregnant. The show ended abruptly. She kept the baby despite encouragement to get an abortion. And the public claim was that it was her also teenage boyfriend at the time. I don't know how old he was, if he was over 18 or not, but her young boyfriend at the time. And she had a daughter named Madison. And the conspiracy theories that have come out and have been around since before this documentary is that it was Dan Schneider's baby. I don't know how true this is. It could go either way for me. It's not like it would surprise me. It would be shocking and devastating to learn that it was Dan Schneider's. The baby could look like him. It could also look like her boyfriend. You can find all the Reddit threads that compare photos and talk about the situation and that maybe she was paid off to not say it was his, that she was offered money for an abortion and refused, that she was sent in isolation to cover Dan's ass. There's a lot of theories there. I don't know what's true and what's not. Jamie didn't really say much about it in her memoir. That's the conspiracy there, but that is how it ended for Jamie. She's no longer with the father of her child, and she's continued to have children with her new husband. And I'm just adding this for information, that daughter of hers, Madison, had a terrible accident a few years back and almost died. She was in an ATV accident and she got stuck underwater. And that is pretty much all that we have heard about Jamie Lynn since Zoe 101. She hasn't gone on to do much of anything else other than just be Britney Spears' little sister during Britney Spears' breakdown. She wrote a memoir that kind of trashed Britney, but it is rumored that Britney did not have a great relationship with Dan Schneider and some of the people that she was on set with, because Britney had big feelings about a lot of things that were going on, and it's very unclear what those things are. So I've always been interested to know if anything more will come out about Jamie Lynn's experience on Nickelodeon now that this movie has come out and now that Britney is not under conservatorship, maybe we'll learn more, or maybe it is just what it is and Jamie got pregnant by her boyfriend. I don't know if we'll ever know. But yeah, that's Jamie Lynn. That's Zoe 101.
And so this type of content was really ubiquitous among these Dan Schneider written and produced shows. There are also some really infamous videos. I guess they were like internet promotion videos that were like online extras for Victorious, the show that featured future pop star Ariana Grande. And some of these videos include things like she has a bra and she's putting tomatoes in the bra. And there's another scene where she is trying to get juice from a potato, which you mentioned earlier. She's like, can a teenage girl get juice from a potato? And then she's
like squeezing it and like moaning.
And she's trying, yeah, she's trying to wring it out. But
and she's like, like it's very weird.
Yeah, you can see how she may have been coached to deliver that line. And it's not like she's just trying to squeeze a potato. And then there's a scene that involves her trying to fit her foot into her mouth and suck her toes, which is another foot-involved scene. And then there's another scene that is another cum shot style scene that is her trying to drink water from a water bottle upside down. And she's laying with her head laying over the edge of the bed and she dumps a water bottle on her face and is acting. I feel it's hard to describe this stuff sometimes because it does feel like I am describing somebody's abuse and it is difficult to describe it in a way that is accurate and doesn't feel like I'm recreating it, and it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is he really created content that is a dream for a pedophile, and that can only come from someone that is sick themselves. Because even if you created a joke and it accidentally had a secondary meaning, as an adult, you're able to see both sides of those and you would err on the safe side of not doing it. And like I said, if these were one-off things, it would be okay. Maybe we could brush that off. It got through, you know, the writer's room and nobody saw what that could look like. Maybe that really is just my mind in the gutter. No, this stuff is really disturbing over and over and over. And the things that cross my mind is like, how many scenes were cut that we haven't even seen that people decided were too raunchy for TV? How much of this was filmed for himself to watch later? These are like the really concerning things that go through my mind. There's just no reason for it. You can create these shows without any of that. However, he created all of them with these things. There really is no denying that he is absolutely a sick pervert.
So this is all kind of leading up to the 2014 Kids' Choice Awards. And at this Kids' Choice Awards, Dan wins his Lifetime Achievement Award. And there are a number of different Nickelodeon stars there to thank Dan and to congratulate him and, like I said, say thank you for all of the things that he's done for their careers. But there's one star that is missing from this, notably, and that is Jeanette McCurdy.
And Jeanette McCurdy is the co-star with iCarly. Miranda Cosgrove is iCarly. Jeanette McCurdy is her best friend, Sam. Miranda Cosgrove started on Drake and Josh, and she got her spinoff as iCarly. Sam was her goofy best friend, and I loved Sam. I loved Sam more than Carly. She reminded me a lot of my best friend. Like, she was always down to roast me and was really silly and sarcastic, and the girl that didn't care about boys. She was such a great character on that show, so I'm not surprised that she got her own spinoff on Sam and Cat, but I had aged out of that, out of Nickelodeon when Sam and Cat came, but Sam was such a great character. Jeanette McCurdy did a great job on that, and I really did not hear anything about Jeanette McCurdy until she wrote her book a couple years ago, and the title alone was shocking. I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead, or I'm Glad My Mom Died is the title of the book, and it recounts her experience as a child actor and her broken relationship with her mother, but notably, it talks about her experiences with, quote, the creator, quote, the producer that she never names but is pretty clearly assumed to be Dan Schneider.
Yeah. And she, again, details the type of abusive treatment that she experienced at the hands of this unnamed TV show creator.
And she does state in her book that the Nickelodeon Network offered her a paycheck of something like $300,000, I believe, to keep quiet about any of her unsettling experiences from when she starred in iCarly. And she rejected that and instead wrote about her experiences in her book. But she also alleges in her book that the creator was pressuring her into drinking alcohol underage on or off the set and had admitted and compared her to the actors on the Victoria show that he was also getting drunk all the time.
And so right around this time, Dan Schneider is working on his current Nickelodeon show, Sam and Cat. And this leads to Nickelodeon, the network, starts to begin an investigation into Dan Schneider, into the toxic culture that is taking place on these shows. Nickelodeon, like, starts to investigate. And ultimately, that investigation by Nickelodeon leads to the exposure of, like I said, a toxic culture on the set. And at this point, Dan is not really allowed to any longer interact with the cast. He's sent to stay in his office, and he claims that he stepped back from the show, and he was only going to give notes from his office from this point and not work on set directly with the cast anymore. But the claim is also that he was banned from working on the set, that he was no longer allowed to be on the set. From this investigation that takes place in 2014 that has Dan removed from his shows and no longer working on set, rumors continue online about all of this type of stuff that's going on. Like, it's not cooling down. This is only heating up at this time. And so he has some new shows in 2017. Dan's new shows that he's working on are Henry Danger and Game Shakers.
I've literally never heard of those.
Yeah,
I'm
me neither. I've never heard of either of those. This is way late in this. But a new investigation is launched into Dan by Nickelodeon in 2017. And what's really different about this investigation is not really anything else that has taken place all throughout time, but really what has happened in society around that. And what is different between 2014 and 2017 is that in 2016 is when the hashtag MeToo drops.
Yeah.
And Dan Schneider is one of those names that gets mentioned. And so 2017 is when another investigation is launched into Dan Schneider. And this ultimately leads to Dan being let go from Nickelodeon in 2018. That is the end. They say that he is given a large settlement, around $7 million.
Holy shit.
But he no longer works for Nickelodeon at that point.
Wow, they paid him $7 million to be a creep.
Yeah, go away.
So then that is the end of Dan, and he hasn't worked on anything since 2019, right?
So yeah, that's essentially it. Dan Schneider canceled.
I guess. He didn't go to jail. He didn't completely lose his career. And he got $7 million. And we can wrap this up with his apology video. What I did find interesting is that he doesn't really deny anything. He just says, you know, if anybody felt like I treated them wrong, I owe them an apology. It's like vague and specific, and
he certainly makes explanations for just about everything that we cover. They kind of go like point by point and ask him like, what about this? What about that? And he makes a response that seems fairly reasonable, but it also kind of leaves you thinking that either you were down with it or you weren't. Like, he's asked specifically about the massages. That's up front. He's asked This is in a 20-minute interview that takes place on YouTube, and the interviewer, who is a former All That cast member, asks him specifically about the massages, which Dan addressed, and he is very apologetic about this specifically. He says that he apologizes. He says that it was wrong and that he's embarrassed that he put people through that. So, you know, we can take that for what it is.
Or is he just embarrassed that we're all talking about it?
Yeah,
now?
Exactly. They ask him about the situation in the writer's room and having the female writers split a salary, which he claims is a fairly common practice for people who are first-time writers being hired on to a new show.
But in regards to, the uncomfortable scenes and all of that, mm-hmm. I think he sort of just resorts to, you know, what I said in the beginning of this podcast. Oh, he didn't mean anything dirty, if you took it that way.
I think that his defense of the inappropriate jokes when asked about that specifically is really his weakest defense. This is where he says that these jokes were written for a kid audience and that they were written because kids thought they were funny. And on its face, that is clearly not true. Like, you do not write a cum shot joke for an audience of preteens who do not know what that is. And then let's go back to my own experience of at least the first couple seasons of All That, which was that it wasn't funny.
But I mean, but as to a kid, is someone just getting something squirted on their face funny? Is seeing a kid stick their toe in their mouth funny? It would have been funny to me at 10 years old.
In my opinion, I didn't think the show was funny.
I specifically think about iCarly, which is very much about that type of humor, because they were supposed to be characters that were like YouTube stars, and they had a studio up in her apartment. She lived with her brother. Again, another character with no parents around, which I see a theme of. Okay, let's just give this little girl the freedom of being an adult. And then he makes her a YouTube star. And think about YouTube at that time and the videos that were being put on YouTube. Think about Jackass era. That humor was funny. Let's stick a foot in our mouth. Let's squirt stuff on your face. Let's eat a bunch of sugar until we throw up. Like, that's what YouTube stars were doing. And so the idea that, like, you know, when I was 10, 12 years old watching iCarly, I didn't find any of that sexual at all at that time. I really think that he thought he got away with it. He really thought he did it in such a genius way that he could be sexual and not be caught doing it.
I just think he thought that was funny. I think he just thought that was funny that he could make sex jokes that kids didn't get. I think that just kind of, he thought that was funny. You know?
Yeah, but I definitely think he thought he could get away with it by saying, that wasn't dirty. We're just squirting stuff on our face. We're just eating our toes. That's what they do on YouTube.
And he kind of says that in his response, apology video, whatever. He's like, if that stuff was bad, like, just cut it. I would have just said cut it. If people don't like it, then I just want to write shows that people like.
I mean,
you're a cop out.
There is some truth to that. It went through a lot of people who didn't cut it, right?
Yes.
It, not just the writer's room
and
not just Nickelodeon, but the fan base. Like, were our parents not weirded out by these things? Did they? Or were we really the generation of kids watching TV without our families?
And he also specifically says that there were many levels of creative control at Nickelodeon. There were many levels of scrutiny over him. And, you know, while the documentary and the things that the people who are on set say make it seem like he had ultimate control, he certainly claims that he was not the top level, and he certainly was not a top level executive as an executive producer and head writer. There would have been a number of executives above him. He says that he has bosses who have bosses who have bosses, bosses who are approving all of that. And honestly, I think that part is very true. I think that there is, in the same way that every abuser needs enablers, that there were a number of people at Nickelodeon who are the people who are above this, who were absolutely, like, this was making money, this was doing very well for Nickelodeon, and that they were the ones who were signing off on all of this humor, and they would have known well. They were censors, you know?
Well, and I get that some of them were victims themselves and that he was threatening they could lose their job.
but people these, underneath him.
But these adults 100% prioritized the possibility of losing their job over what was happening to these kids and the way that they were being exploited. And also, where the fuck were these parents of these children who are supposedly like managing their careers and watching their kids on set get slime facials and sucking their own toes, and the parents not be like, I'm not comfortable with my daughter being filmed on national TV doing these things because it can be taken this way.
Yeah, they were
There's
on set.
So many people who have responsibility in what happened to these kids, from the parents to the writers to obviously Dan Schneider to the network to the fans. It was a failure all around for these kids.
He addresses a number of other things that were covered in the documentary, the on-air dares, the relationship with the female writers and black cast, Amanda Bynes and her emancipation, all of which he kind of writes off. He also brings up the part about him potentially being banned from the set of the show. He claims that that is not true, that that never happened. He merely retreated to his office to give notes from his office, and that he would have been allowed on set if he wanted. He was not banned from set. He says that specifically. And then he says one more thing that is very important. He claims that he was not the person to hire the subject of our next episode, Brian Peck. Actor turned dialogue coach.
And his named victim.
Yeah, and his victim, who is not known for a long time, but who comes forward in this documentary and reveals himself to be
Drake Bell. So the next episode will cover the history of Brian Peck and the legal case with Drake Bell and what led up to that, what's happened since, the statements that Drake has made on the documentary and since the documentary, since he's been interviewed, and some of the relationship between Drake and Josh on the show and after the show and current in regards to what's come out, and some of the stars that have popped up with statements or apologies or non-apologies. So we're going to cover all of that in the next episode. So stay tuned.
Next part is coming. We'll also be discussing the environment at Nickelodeon and how somebody who is an abuser like Brian Peck could have ended up working with children, and how oversight at Nickelodeon regarding having these types of abusers working on set, working closely with children, might not have been. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, and they're not alone. So we're actually going to learn about a couple more abusers that had popped up in that time as well. So,
do you have any final thoughts?
I'm good with Dan Schneider. Bye, Dan Schneider. Canceled. He's been pretty canceled. He should remain canceled. I would love to see him investigated further. I bet you there's a lot we don't know. I don't like Dan. And I'm
not a Dan fan.
Yeah, and I'm interested to explore who defends Dan, or at least as a Dan apologist to some degree, versus who doesn't like Dan. And we're going to cover more of that in the next episode as well.
This has been interesting since all of this has been coming out, that a number of people have come to the defense of Dan Schneider for a number of reasons.
Yeah, including our next victim, Drake.
So I guess that wraps this one up.
Yeah, signing off, Herman.
Thank you for listening. Visit our Instagram.
Follow our Instagram. Also, thank you to all of our new listeners. We've had such an increase in our downloads recently. We have so many new followers and listeners, and we just really appreciate you. So I'm glad you're here. I'm sorry that Diddy is such a piece of shit, but we're glad that he brought you here.
Yeah,
so,
and we do have some new thoughts on the Diddy developments and everything that's taking place, but I think we're kind of also holding off a little bit to see how this investigation goes and if it leads to anything criminal and where that will go. So
yeah, because
stay tuned
at the time
for future Diddy talk and developments. I mean, hey, we're following it as you are.
Because at the time of recording this, his house was raided this morning, and maybe he's on the run. We don't know.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of going on to this story, and we certainly have a lot to say about it. and we will be weighing in. So stay tuned for that.
We're trying not to be the Diddy podcast, yeah, but he just keeps providing more and more content. So
yeah, we have a number of other subjects that we'd like to get to as well. So those are also coming and we're going to develop that. But don't worry, we will also not forget Diddy. We'll keep doing that.
Yeah, I really think Diddy is the latest Epstein, and we're going to start getting lists of names. All right, we will catch you guys on the next episode of Part 2 of Nickelodeon.
Oh, and also, we're putting together a web store right now, so web store incoming with some designs, some sticker designs, and t-shirts and other merch, so stay tuned for that. We're planning on launching that soon.
We'll keep announce on out. Our Instagram, so make sure to follow our Instagram at Everything's Canceled.
Yeah.
Bye, Herman.
Bye.
The preceding editorial message does not necessarily represent the family of fine Nickelodeon products and services.
Yes, it does!
Nickelodeon, the first and only network for kids.
On the rickety love while living number one, Nickelodeon.